Keyshawn Johnson, Jay Williams, and Zubin Mahinte.
You and me got the best seat in the house to listen to these guys tell us about the most pressurized moments in sports.
Mornings, coming August 17th to the all-new ESPN Radio.
And a good Tuesday morning. It is Dave Rothenberg and Bart Scott with you, ESPN Radio, ESPN News, SiriusXM Channel 80, and your smart speakers. Now, in just 6 days, the new morning show starts next Monday, 6 o'clock Eastern. Keyshawn, J. Will, and Zubin, and Bart Scott. We're going to have Keyshawn on later today. We have a lot of guests today, many, many guests, and I say good morning to you. What's going on, pal?
Maintaining, coming to you live from the studio because the internet highway is slow on my hood.
Nice. Back to the daily grind. Now, Bart Scott, are you ready to find out who will be joining us today on the show? If you think of them right now, they'll be joining us on the show. ESPN Radio, presented by Progressive Insurance. Here's our guest list for today. Mark Packer, 6:15 Eastern. Mike Tenenbaum, 6:30. Let's just say this, Bart. They're all Eastern, so you don't need to worry, okay? Okay. They're all Eastern.
No miles
Mark
standard.
Packer, 6:15. Mike Tenenbaum, 6:30. Booger McFarland, 7:15. Keyshawn, 8:30. Mel Kiper, 9. Patrick Surtain, 9:30. If you miss any of those guests, you can listen to all 4 hours on demand in the ESPN app. You say, but why don't you have extended guests, guys, right? Like, I heard that. I woke up this morning, heard, why are there not hour-long guests? So for those asking that, Peter Burns, host of Best Week Ever, and the SEC Network will be on with us from 7 to 8. Dari Noka from 8 to 9, of course, from Dari and Mel. So, Bart, we have it all covered, and we start where we spent a lot of time yesterday, college football. It felt yesterday like college football was slipping and fading. I think 24 hours later, it kind of feels like there's a little bit more momentum that we might have college football this coming season.
Yeah, but who's going to take that first step, right? And who wants to be able to make that decision about do we play or don't we play? Who's responsible for that? You see the players with the hashtag. You see the coaches kind of making their plea that the players are safer with them. But ultimately, who's going to put their name and who's going to say, okay, this is my decision and I'll take the consequences going forward? Because I feel like it's a cop-out to say, oh, well, players want to play. Okay, well, they're young men and you're coaching and parents sent them to you so that you can try and guide them and make them men. They're not men yet, and players are going to want to play because that's what they're designed to do. But at the end of the day, then I want you to make sure that you know you're going to be responsible if something tragic happens. And what we're finding out is that you know in the Big Ten that they have research saying that it's in large hearts in six you know players that had COVID. Well, why aren't we sharing that information with everybody? And why aren't we learning from each other?
Well, are we not sharing it, or are the other conferences just putting their head in the sand and not wanting to know that this is a real byproduct of the disease?
I mean, we talked about the pitcher from the Red Sox
right
before. We talked about that yesterday. And, you know, when you talk about just such a large body of sample size of college athletes, how many college football players there are, you know, even if the percentages are low, they're still talking about maybe potentially, you know, complications with, you know, let's say if it's 2%. What's 2% of the college body, you know, of college football? You know, that's more than enough. And something tragic happens, you know, you don't know where or when what the underlying conditions are. But if it can be traced back to COVID and the fact that they played, then who's going to ultimately take responsibility and who's going to be liable? See, that's the thing. They want to, like, liability is a big thing. And it has to fall on somebody's shoulders. Are you willing to be liable if something bad happens? That's what these teams and conferences have to ask themselves. Do you want that on your conscience if it's your conference that suffers the catastrophic loss?
Yeah, see, I agree with you. It's easy today to say it, right? On August 11th to say, sure, we should play college football. But is it easy, God forbid something bad happens, 2 months, 3 months, 4 months down the road to say, that's right, you know, I'm the commissioner of the Big Ten, of the SEC, of the Big 12. I pushed forward for college football. That becomes concerning. Now, let's take a listen to Heather Dinich, ESPN college football analyst. She was on SportsCenter with Kevin Negandhi. And she mentions what you mentioned. The main issue is long-term health effects to the heart, which is really concerning.
A lot. That is a driving force amongst the conversations from the medical advisors and the conference commissioners and the university presidents. That is what is scaring the bejesus out of the presidents right now. And that's part of the information that is expected to be presented from the Pac-12 Medical Advisory Group on Tuesday. So those are very real concerns. It's an excellent reported piece, and they just did a great job showing exactly what they're dealing with, those presidents, and what they're talking about.
So, look, I have kids. You have kids. Explain to me how you could actually put your kids in any sort of harm's way, knowing that there's a real possibility that they're going to wind up with some kind of a heart issue moving forward with COVID-19. I don't know. As a parent, I could never do it.
I mean, listen, my son plays high school football. And, you know, every once in a while I get an email from his coach saying, hey, well, practice is canceled. I don't care what day it is. My son ain't showing up. Because at the end of the day, it's not worth it. We're talking about a year out of your life. And listen, how hard is it to just push pause? Just push pause. Just push pause and say, listen, this is where we are. We're going to have to make adjustments for the incoming high school kids and figure things out. But as far as everybody here that's on scholarship, you're going to be in the same place this time next year. And you're going to be bigger, faster, stronger. And you're going to be able to be a better player to have a better chance to go to the league. I'm not saying who wants to be that commissioner that says, hey, you know, I regret to say that, you know, we lost so-and-so and so-and-so today. And he died doing what he loves. Really? He died doing what he loved when this was a preventable death? Like, nobody wants to be that commissioner. Nobody wants to be that coach. Like, to go tell a parent that, hey, you know, I understand that maybe, because we understand, right? A lot of this stuff goes back to economics. And a lot of players are playing, and they'll put themselves at risk because they have responsibilities of so many other people, not themselves, right? And I'm talking about those who are trying to get to the league to take care of their mom or get their kids or their sister or their brothers out of a bad situation, a bad spot. They almost feel obligated to say, you know what, I'm here for a reason. This was the year that I was going to try and come out to take care of my family. So you got to protect them from themselves and understand. I understand that the situation is difficult, but I don't want you to make a decision based on need and desperation. Let's use our heads. Let's use our brains and say, listen, we can push through and we'll be okay. Because just think how many college athletes have parents that are back that may not have unemployment running out, may not be able to just making decisions about how they're going to feed their brothers and sisters. And how many athletes are going to feel under pressure to do something about it? Don't make it right. It's just a bad situation.
I think you're right. I think you're 100% right. And we're going to talk to Patrick Surtain 9:30 this morning. He's one of the top college football players in the country and realistically a top 10 pick. And you know what, Barton? I don't know if you feel like this. One of the arguments or one of the phrases that is beginning to upset me is these players have worked too hard to not play right. The season. That is the biggest cop-out I've heard. So, I mean, the country is in mass chaos, Bart. I mean, we have something sweeping that we haven't seen in 100-plus years. To say that these guys have worked too hard to – you're not throwing it away. You're being safe. You're being realistic. I mean, restaurants aren't open, right? I mean, this is not just –
They worked hard. They worked hard, too.
Everybody works hard. Bart, everybody works hard. Nobody wants to throw anything away, but I think sometimes, and I'm not saying it's the right thing, I don't think we have all the answers and all the information yet, but my point would be, why don't we just push back? Why can't we just say, you know what, we're not going to start in September, like all the professional sports did. We can't continue in March. Let's look forward to where we are in a couple months, and we'll figure it out then.
Because it's billions of dollars involved in this. And they're saying, hey, you know, the other guys that had billions of dollars involved decided to play. But these are grown men that understand what they're getting themselves into. They have the resources to opt out. And they have the resources to say, you know what, if I need to isolate away from my family and my kids, I can do that. They have millions of dollars on the line. And it's a big difference between having millions of dollars on the line. And it's a big difference between having a scholarship that can be paused and embraced.
I guess so. I don't know. This whole thing is one big disaster for college sports now.
I always say do what the smart people do. All the smart nerds, they say, you know what, we ain't dealing with this. We done for the year. See you next year.
Yeah. I mean, but you know what? They have a lot less money on the line. The Ivy League, the MAC, has a lot less money on the line than some of these bigger conferences.
Doesn't mean it. Don't mean it what they did.
I agree with you.
It was wrong.
I happen to agree with you. All guests join us on the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line. Now, coming up, Art, we heard from a lot of the biggest names in college football yesterday, but what does that actually mean? We'll try to get to the bottom of that next.
Hello. Keyshawn Johnson, Jay Williams, and Zubin Mahente. Keyshawn, J. Will, and Zubin, coming August 17th to the all-new ESPN Radio.
Let's bring him in, ESPN NFL front office insider, and I guess somewhat my nemesis, Bart. He's been very mean to me lately, and that is the wonderful Mike Tenenbaum.
Good Don't morning, you ever Mike. Disrespect you? Uncle TB like that. Uncle TB he's is been, an outstanding
individual. He's been mean to me. Mike, be
honest. If he's mean to you, then you deserve it. You're trying to interrupt him from his smoothies, and that is a very important part of his mood. Let him get his smoothie down.
Thanks, Bart. I really appreciate it. And remember, you know, Coach Rex Ryan at ESPN, we go by what we see. And if Dave goes on vacation and Chris Carlin, you know, ably replaces Dave, Dave becomes the Wally Pip of, you know, yep. New York City daytime sportscasters.
You lost your job on your day off, Dave?
No, I lost nothing. I had Tenenbaum giving me a hard time for taking a well-deserved vacation. I can't wait, Mike. I can't wait till you take vacation. I can't wait till you take vacation.
I'm waiting for you to have somebody else in on my, you know, Tuesday at 11 a.m. spot, you know, and then I'll never get it back.
Yeah, that's right. No, but I appreciate you, so I'll always bring you back. All right, I mean, there's so much to get into today, but you're the front office guy. I wanted to start with this avenue. If we don't have college football and we don't know what's going to happen, it's very tenuous right now, what happens to the draft? How do you appropriately run a draft, have a draft board, if you can't see these guys for a full year in college football?
Guys, great point. That's what everyone around the league is talking about. And talking to a few teams yesterday, people just don't see the draft as predictable next year for obvious reasons. So teams that have multiple picks, they're going to try to get out if they can. Because, look, the A players, totally unaffected. Trevor Lawrence, Justin Fields, they're going to go where they're going to go. But of all things that happened yesterday, maybe the most insightful was Joe Burrow's tweet, which is, if we went back a year ago, we'd be talking about how Tua was the presumptive number one pick. Could Justin Herbert possibly close the gap? Nobody knew who Joe Burrow was. Joe Burrow was a failed third quarterback at Ohio State, transfers to LSU, and candidly had a very sort of average first year at LSU, and then obviously the rest is history. And Joe Burrow yesterday, guys, tweeted that in all likelihood, if he didn't play football a year ago, right now he would be looking for a job, meaning a job as an LSU student graduate. So the concern around the league, candidly, is who's going to be the Joe Burrow we're going to miss out on? And that's part of the big narrative is without college football, the draft will become that much more inexact.
So how do you have the evaluation process? You know, and we don't even know what the offseason is going to look like. If the draft's going to be pushed, you know, what do we do about senior bowl, things of that sort? So you're saying is you predict there's going to be more activity during the NFL season with players that are going to be free agents next year because that's the only thing that's a known commodity that you're talking about. You mentioned a team with multiple picks, and, you know, of course, we're in New York. The Jets have multiple picks. They just made the Jamal Adams trade. You know, does that put them in play to maybe be more aggressive for a player like Yannick and maybe trying to get him out of Jacksonville, knowing that, you know, it's going to either be between him, Judon, you know, those guys may sign back. We know that the relationship with Yannick has spoiled or soured, and he won't be coming back.
Yeah, Bart, I totally agree. If I'm sitting there, if I'm the Jets and I could give up a first-round pick for a young, productive, healthy pass rusher, a Matt Judon, a Yannick Ngakoue, I got to take a very long look at that because I know what I have. Whereas without a college football season, again, sitting in that seat, look, it's always a crapshoot. Bart, look at the great career you had. You weren't drafted. Like, that should never happen. Like, our process is flawed. We know that. It becomes, those flaws become magnified without a college football season. So I think that's really a great point. And then when we talk about the combine, really what a lot of people think the combine likely would become is if we play college football in the spring, we're looking at going to Indianapolis, having physicals, and interviewing the players with no on-field activities for the obvious reason that they're just coming off of a season. A lot of them will obviously be, you know, nicked up, won't have time to prepare. So we could be looking at playing college football in the spring, having physicals, interviewing the players, and then having a draft.
What about this backlog of just players? You got high school players trying to come in. It's hard to evaluate high school players because I would argue that those same jumps take place in high school as well. So then you're going to have some under scouted high school players coming in, and then now you have college seniors, or, you know, would you opt out if it is a season? If it's, let's just say they say, you know, it's going to be a season, do you opt out as somebody who would have been a mid-round pick because you want to be able to have a whole season to maybe be able to show what you're worth or, and that you can play?
Yeah, it's so interesting. There's so much to discuss about, will everybody have another free year of eligibility to go back to try to enhance their stock? And likewise, would a high school player be able to have a gap year, maybe two redshirt years to develop without playing? So there's so much to sort through, and those are all things that, candidly, it just doesn't seem there's a plan right now. I think the question I would ask if I was in the room today in the Big Ten is, hey, guys, what would it take for you to feel comfortable to play? Like, what are the three or four boxes we have to check? Because I thought what Nick Saban said yesterday made a ton of sense, guys, and Bart, as a former player, I know you can relate to this, but the world of football provides incredible structure, and I'm hard-pressed to think that players wouldn't be more safe and more healthy within the structures of these incredible football programs than they would be left to their own devices. So I would challenge the presidents to say, you know, give me the situation where it's actually better for these players not to be with their teams right now.
Well, see, Uncle TB, I'm saying that you can do both, right? You can provide a safe environment and not play at the same time, because you can have these guys here, they can get bigger, stronger. It should guarantee that you're not going to have injury. And then for the next year, you have a more mature body and a more mature adult, maybe should have some better football acumen, should improve because you got more time to teach, go through each steps of zones or zone blocking or, you know, catching or tackling. But you still can give them a safe environment, because once they play and you go and play an opponent, you have to trust that that organization has taken everything as seriously as you have, and that you don't have any false negatives or false positives, and make sure that it's not somebody maybe exposing one person, because all it takes is one. This thing spreads like the measles.
Yeah, no, that's right. I think the counter to that, though, would be is, if they're in the building, if they're lifting, if they're running, if they're training, then teams average between, depending on the conference, $60, $70, $80 million a year to play. And, you know, let's just face it, you know, that's material amounts of money to all these schools. You know, so for the Big Ten to say, hey, we're going to feed our players, we're going to train our players, if we're testing all these players and everyone's testing negative, we have a chance to put $80 million into each of our schools, you know, We should be able to do that. So, anyway, I think that's really like the pro and the con of it, which is, do we keep the players in structure and not play, or do we feel like there's a pathway to a reasonable plan? And to me, reasonable always comes back to this, and Dave, you know, we've talked about this for weeks now, which is, there are going to be bumps in the road. We're going to have more of the Matt Staffords. Mm-hmm. We're going to have more of the Miami Marlins going on in baseball. But I think the most important thing on any of these plans is, how do we respond when there are bumps in the road? Because, as you said, it's such a contagious disease that it's unrealistic to think that any plan is going to be airtight. The question I think that needs to be asked is, what are the reasonable precautions we could take where the pros outweigh the cons?
Mike Tenenbaum with us, ESPN NFL front office insider. Rothenberg and Scott with you, ESPN Radio. So you talk Joe Burrow. How about anybody in the MAC? How about Trey Lance? Like, yeah, there's still hope that these Power 5 conferences are going to play football, and we don't know what will happen, but... but how about the ones that will not play? Like, how much of an advantage does an Alabama, does a Clemson, does an Oklahoma, does a Michigan, Ohio State have if they play and these other guys from smaller schools just don't play at all this season, Mike?
Dave, 100%. And again, I sat in that seat for a long time, and I'm just telling you, like, I'm going to turn the card from an Alabama and Ohio State, because we know the strength coach, we know the position coach, we know the scheme, we know exactly what they can do. So I'd rather take a C player with certainty than, you know, Trey Lance is another example of, he is such an intriguing player. There's a lot of people think that he could work his way into the top 10. It would really hurt him not to play this year. You know, he needs every rep, every piece of film possible to put his case forward. Again, he's more on the radar now than Joe Burrow was a year ago, but those are the players that will certainly be hurt.
The rich get richer and the poor get poor. That's kind of how it works. Tell me this. I wanted to ask you about, you know, players opting out in the NFL. And as a former general manager, you know, let's take a team, of course, like the Jets, you know, because I'm here, so I kind of know the infrastructure. You know, with cutting winners, with C.J. Mosley opting out, that's about $22 million. Like, are the good general managers or general managers going to use that as an opportunity to front load a contract so that they can maybe pay a starter? They may, you know, let's just say a guy like Logan Ryan. Like, now you have $22 million in which you can give him that is going to be regenerated, you know, once you use it up in this year, right?
Yeah, and in the system now, you can move salary cap room from one year to the next. So in the past, you would definitely try to front load more than, but it's still a point well worth discussing, Bart, which is this. Opportunities as a GM are just ones you got to take advantage of all the time. So Logan Ryan, Jadeveon Clowney, if you just lost Jamal Adams, you just lost C.J. Mosley, and you're sitting there with more cap room than you thought. I always felt like you had to win for today and develop for tomorrow. When we signed Rex, you know, we were fortunate enough to go to the championship game in year one, which obviously is very unusual. But to the extent that you could have your program established and you could bring in a pass rusher, and because you have this room and it's not going to materially impact your plan moving forward, I think that's something you got to take a long look at. Because again, I think, as you know, Bart, it sends the right message to the locker room, which is like, look, guys, like, we're sitting here, we lost an A player, but we also, you know, took advantage of an opportunity, and we still have a chance to win this year. And it provides a lot of energy and hope within your locker room that, hey, this year is not a 4-12 season. We have a chance to win right now. Tom Brady graduated. Why can't we win the division right now?
All right, Mike. Listen, we appreciate it. I don't care what, if you don't like me. I'm still a fan of yours, and I look forward to talking to you on a weekly basis.
Same here, Dave. I mean, look, we didn't even get into your Giants today and talk about DeAndre Baker. There's so much to get to.
I can't. You know what? The world is crazy enough. I can't have the DeAndre Baker, Aldrick Rose's conversations with you today. I can't do it. I can't bring myself to do it.
Dunbar's acquitted, right?
Dunbar is free and clear, and DeAndre Baker is in serious, serious trouble. Between your corners and kickers, you still snuck it in.
Between your corners and kickers, Dave, I don't know, man.
I know. It's not easy to be a Giants fan. Mike, I appreciate it. We'll talk to you soon.
All right. Thanks, guys.
Keyshawn Johnson. Jay Williams.
Williams. He got it.
And Zubin Mahente.
We are back on SportsCenter. ESPN reported.
Keyshawn, J. Will, and Zubin. Mornings, coming August 17th to the all-new ESPN Radio.
All right, Dave Rothenberg and Bart Scott with you, ESPN Radio, ESPN News, Sirius XM Channel 80, and your smart speakers as well. And Peter Burns is with us, our dear buddy Peter Burns, who already, I feel in that first segment of the 7 o'clock Eastern hour, Peter, we bonded like I didn't anticipate, to be honest.
Yeah. Was it what we said on air or before when we were talking about Contra codes and old school Nintendo games and Game Genies?
It was all of it.
I feel like
that's
where we hit our stride.
And to bring people behind the curtain, Bart, I mean, poor Peter had to endure an earthquake, the pandemic, a hurricane. I mean, you've had quite the trifecta this week.
Yeah, it was Charlotte. I had a flat tire yesterday. And the worst part of it, guys, I had to do my first studio show in 5 months. So I had College Football Live. And guess what? No makeup. Couldn't find my makeup. Couldn't find my makeup, gentlemen.
Do you know your color? I think I'm NW55, chocolate mocha.
I think that's Dari Noka as well too. Dari's got a little bit of a dark complexion. He's going to be on in the next hour doing it. No, I went makeup free, and you know what? The world did not end because we honestly, you know what ruled the day? The stuff from Scott Frost and Ryan Day. I mean, Dave, that to me was the big stuff that we got yesterday out of College Football Live.
All right, so let's take a listen. I mean, you talk about a pro's pro. I mean, you led me right to the camel to the water. Now I'm gonna drink
it's like
it down
Luka Doncic
for weeks.
Right here.
It was so well done. All right, let's hear from Ryan Day, College Football Live yesterday. The message to the Big Ten.
I would say we cannot cancel the season right now. We have to at the very least postpone it. And allow us a little bit of time to keep reevaluating everything that's going on. That's the reason why we put this schedule together, to have some flexibility. If we need to take a deep breath, let's take a deep breath. But let's do everything we can. We owe it to these kids to exhaust every single option we possibly can, and then we go from there. But doing that right now, to me right now, would be abrupt.
See, I think that's very fair and reasonable. Like, why, Bart, do we have to go all in this minute and just wipe out college football? Why can't we push it back until we have more information? Maybe there's a vaccine. Maybe there's therapeutics that calm it down. Like, why do we have to go all in on August 11th? Why can't we push it down the road?
I think you can. I think he brings a very valid point. And I think, you know, if you just kind of pause and really get a plan, right, if we're going to play, this is what nobody knows the procedures. And I think all the Power Five conferences, I think everybody who has, you know, some type of, you know, research should share the facts and come together to a conclusion. I feel it's like everybody's working opposite. You know what I mean? They need to work together. Everybody's working independently. I'm sorry. It seems like everybody needs to kind of work together to see what the procedures are, because we know inevitably they're going to be, it's going to be a outbreak somewhere, right? And how do we respond and how to react and how do we learn? How does the other conferences learn from the mistakes or from, you know, an outbreak in another conference? With that, you have to share all this information.
Bart, you look at it, and what you just said is interesting, because why would you not have all the, let's say Power Five, let's take Power Five and put them on their own island, because frankly, that's the way they're operating right now. Why would they not say, you know what, instead of our own conference, like the SEC has 14 different members from 14 different the institutions there on their medical board. Why would you not take three of those people, have them talk to the Big Ten people, the Big 12 people, and create this advisory board and go, hey, listen, let's share notes here. Like, we're all trying to beat the same test. Like, in video game, we're all trying to beat Mike Tyson. Let's all team up together, share notes on how to do it. And yet, they're coming to different conclusions right now. And I think that's probably the most frustrating part. But as much as I'd like, Dave, for there to be a czar of college football, mm-hmm. I don't think these conference commissioners are going to yield their power in their decision-making process to anyone above them. I mean, listen, the commissioner of the SEC, Greg Sankey, talked about it back on May 9th. He goes, listen, I think we all should be on the same page. I'm paraphrasing here. But he said, at the end of the day, I believe that the conferences, there is room for conferences to make different decisions to other conferences. And I think that's what's eventually going to happen here in the next couple of weeks.
And I think that's fair, but I think they all want the same thing, Peter. Like, they all want ultimately to play. And you'd figure that at least they'd pull their minds together with their with their resources as far as just medical advancements and technology and doctors, and figure out a way. If you want to push to play, then figure out the safest, best way. Come to some kind of unionized agreement and try to push forward and find a way to play if that's what you want to do.
Well, and now coaches are looking at it as well, too, and thinking about, all right, if let's say I'm in the Big Ten and I can't play. I mean, take Scott Frost yesterday over at Nebraska. I mean, Dave, you heard exactly what he wanted to say. He was pretty passionate about it.
Yeah, and here he is, Scott Frost, at the press conference yesterday. He says, Nebraska, we want to play football.
We want to play a Big Ten schedule. I hope that's what happens. Our university is committed to playing no matter what. No matter what that looks like and how that looks. We want to play no matter who it is or where it is. So we'll see how all those chips fall. We certainly hope it's in the Big Ten. If it isn't, I think we're prepared to look for other options.
Woo! That's crazy. That's shots fired there. I mean, because we heard conferences going rogue, the ACC and the SEC, but you talk about teams within a conference going rogue. How would that invitation be back to the conference after that if you decide to go against the wishes of the president?
It'd be like The Bachelor, right? Like the SEC and the ACC are like handing out roses. Like the Big 12, Bob Bowlesby is like, here's the package we could put together for you, Nebraska, to come back.
That's right.
We saw Notre Dame, right? But Notre Dame's always been independent. We saw them do it. But, like, can somebody that belongs to a conference step out of the conference and say, you know what? I'm done.
Yeah, but you can't do that. Paul Feinbaum said you can't do that. Scott Frost can't get out of a conference for a year, right? And he's even cynical in Nebraska leaving the conference for 1 year. They make $55 million to the Big Ten TV agreement, so it doesn't add up. You can say this, but these things don't add up, Bart.
It doesn't. Who knows? Maybe they can work something out with the conference.
But nothing. None of this. Guys, none of this makes sense right now. Right? It's not as if, well, on page 43 of the COVID-19 playbook, here's what you should do in Article 3, and here's the bibliography in the back and the works cited. Like, Major League Baseball, one of the storied institution of all of sports, America's pastime, legitimately, like, 4 hours before the season started, said, I don't know, let's just add a couple more playoff teams. Hey, we're adding more playoff teams. Oh, hey, let's just start a runner on second and an extra. Let's do that. Like,
that's right.
There are no
rules
in a pandemic.
When we start the month of August, how about a doubleheader? We make it seven games. You're right.
Sure.
We have never flown more blind, Peter, than we are now as a society, as handling this pandemic in its own right, and sports as a byproduct of all of that as well.
I mean, but again, this, if there was ever a season, and this is not just college football, this is everything. If there was ever a season to just say, let's think outside the box, let's reevaluate this. You've never had the leeway, Bart, of what's going on in front of you to go, let's try to do things differently. Guess what? Some things are not going to work. Some things will. But if you aren't thinking outside of the box during this pandemic, what the hell are you doing? Like, why are you actually in a position of power if you're trying to do things the same exact way? Because life is not the same exact way right now.
But that's why I don't understand why it's not procedures already in place. That's why I don't understand why they didn't, you know, talk to the CDC and kind of get, you know, how do you, you know, make sports safe when we saw all the professional leagues already doing this. Why don't they have the understanding about how to go forward and how to live with this virus? It seems like they're reacting, they're moving the goalposts over and over and over again. And somebody's at some point going to have to make a decision and say, this is how we handle this. This is our rule book. This is our playbook. This is how we're going to move forward.
So with that being said, I'll throw it to both of you guys here. I think one of the reasons why college football, at least the SEC, I know for covering them, said we're going to look at 9/26 start date. Okay, the reason why is we want to see what happens when kids get back on campus. But more importantly, let's take the league that you played in, Bart, the NFL. They want to see what happens when training camp starts, when practices start, when all of a sudden right. they start ramping up. And if that's the case, why would you not collect that data? Right? Why would you not at least see what the right. NFL does? And if the NFL says, hey, we got to shut this thing down, this is not working, every single college coach and every single administrator, every single player be like, dude, if the NFL can't work it out right now, we got to pack it up because they are the ones that are the best funded. Why in the world would you not get that information before making that decision? It is just absolutely baffling to me.
Yeah, it is baffling. And you know what? I talked to someone a couple weeks ago involved in the NFL, and he said it's ridiculous that the NFL wouldn't look in Major League Baseball and look at all the things they've done well mm-hmm. and done poorly. And it's the same thing with the NFL. Whatever they start to do well and poorly, your college football, if you push this thing down the road a little bit, then you pick up the good and the bad that they've done. Like, that's what you have to do. This is uncharted territory, guys. We've never seen anything like this before. You'd be an idiot not to look at what others are doing successfully and unsuccessfully.
Dave, what about the news today that Major League Baseball is looking at putting a bubble together for mm-hmm. the postseason, right? Is that not is not looking at every single press release that comes from the NHL, that comes from the WNBA, that comes from the NBA about how the bubble works? Major League Baseball is learning on the fly. So why would college football not do the same? Again, it's maddening at this point.
I mean, you can try and create your mini bubbles on campuses, right? Because you know when I was in college, you know, we had places to stay that was specific just for the athletes. You know, and I know it's different now. You have guys that live off campus, but you should.
Well, that was the 70s, Bart. I think that was what, 68, 67 when you were in college?
Hey, I'm in my 30s, man. Stop it. Well, you know, when we had it that way you can control the conditions. You can control the environment in which the athletes are in. And I would suggest that, hey, I wouldn't even allow my athletes to go to class. Why would you put your athletes at class to be potentially exposed by a student that may not be doing the right things? So it's almost how, like the players are going to have to live in a bubble. They're going to have to understand that they're going to be in a bubble. They're going to have to go to practice and come out, and they're going to have to go to class. You know, maybe at the facility. I don't know, different places have different places, but we all have study table. Do your work at your study table and be able to get your work done and understand that this is just the environment. If we want football, you guys are going to have to sacrifice.
You know how many classes Joe Burrow, Heisman Trophy winner, number one pick of the NFL draft, took on campus last year, Dave?
Zero, I would guess.
All online camp.
Zero. All right, ESPN Radio reminding you that the UFC heavyweight title is on the line when Stipe Miocic and Daniel Cormier complete their trilogy at UFC 252 on ESPN+. UFC 252 is exclusively available to ESPN Plus subscribers for $64.99. Visit ESPNplus.com/PPV for more. Peter Burns with us for the hour. Now, you're going to be replaced by Dari Noka at 8 o'clock. How do you feel about that?
I feel like that's why you have opening acts, and then the headliner comes on, because Dari's like the godfather. So what I do and why I've stayed so long here at ESPN is that I set the bar just low enough to where everybody else looks that much better. And so that's really what I bring to this company as this corporation.
So you know your role, and you play it as well as you possibly can.
Role player. That's it. You know what? I'm not even – I'm the eighth man on the bench. I fill out the roster. I'm the kid with the high GPA that makes everybody's grade point average look better for the team, so I'm okay with that.
Well, I'm a fan. Peter Burns joining us here, Rothenberg and Scott on ESPN Radio.
Draymond Green is rich, too.
Serious XM channel 80 and your smart speaker.
Not as rich as Clay and stuff, but he's rich.
That's true.
All right, let's bring him in. ESPN football analyst Booger McFarland joins us here on the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line with Shell V-Power Nitro Plus Premium Gasoline. Booger, it's a wild time here in the landscape of college football. Dave Rothenberg, Bart Scott, Peter Burns with you on ESPN Radio. I want to start out with this. I think I saw you yesterday pretty impassioned saying there should not be college football right now, right? Explain why to the audience listening.
Well, good morning, first of all, guys. You know, kind of what I've looked at is this, is that they continue to find out more information about this virus every single day. And it seems like it's ever changing. Nobody really has a grasp on it. And I think ultimately, if I was a kid, I would want to play. If I was a 17 to 20-year-old, I would want to play. I've been training. I've been going through all the rigors of preparation for a season. So that's not even really a question. What it comes down to is big business, and the NCAA president has to weigh making money now or the possibility of litigation and liability later. I'll give you a prime example. Let's take a real-life example. The number one offensive guard in college football is a guy named Trey Smith. Trey Smith has suffered with blood clots during his career at Tennessee. He's had a lot of issues with that. He's missed some time with that. And I think we all know blood is pumped from our heart. Well, one of the newest revelations from a doctor is that this COVID affects the heart in some form or some way. So let's just say Tennessee plays football and Trey Smith catches COVID and somehow the COVID impacts him in a negative way, and something catastrophic happens. Tennessee, regardless of whether Trey Smith signs a waiver, regardless of whether his parents sign a waiver, Tennessee is going to be liable, not just for millions. We're talking about a billion-dollar lawsuit. And I just think that the presidents are weighing, do I allow the kids to play and we can make our $70, $80, $90, $100 million, whatever we make per year, or do I roll the dice and risk something like that happening to a player on the field? And I just don't think that the presidents in the NCAA are willing to take that risk. And that's the reason I said that we're not going to have college football. It's not that I don't want to play. I'm just looking at the reason why they don't want football to be played. It's just that we don't know enough about the COVID and how it's going to affect players and the long-term effects. I just don't think the NCAA presidents can afford to allow these guys to play.
Boogie brought up Trey Smith, and he said yesterday to Tennessee media, he says, quote, ultimately to get my dream goals and aspirations is worth the risk to me. So you know, we're talking about one of the guys that is a great example that might be at the highest risk of this, saying the risk is worth it for me. Does that not carry any more weight when you see Trey Smith and when you see players say, listen, I'm well aware of the risk. I still want to play.
I got a 9-year-old who, if I let him, he would eat 12 honey buns a night, Peter.
I would, too. I'm 41 years old. Absolutely.
All right. At some point, there's a reason these kids are still called amateurs. Now, I know that's just a facade. The NCAA wants to keep amateurism and keep making money. However, that comes into play here when you're dealing with student-athletes that are considered amateurs. That's way different than professional football players who are grown men, who are on their own, who are making decisions. They got bank accounts, they got mortgages, et cetera, et cetera. These kids are considered amateur athletes, and I just don't think, even though Trey Smith technically is a grown man, that he can make that decision and take all liability. That's the key word here. If somehow the players could absolve the institutions of all liability, the presidents would sign off on playing a season tomorrow. I just don't know legally if there is a way with COVID-19 where they can absolve the universities of all liability. I'm not a lawyer, and hopefully there's one that's smarter than me that can explain that. But to me, that's the big catch right now. The big catch is really not, okay, a guy catching COVID, because, I mean, guys have COVID now on these football teams. The catch is what is going to be the long-term ramifications and what liability does each university have if and when something happens that's catastrophic.
Like you said, Booger, you don't know how this virus is going to react and how long this virus lives in the body. We talk about, you know, chicken pox and how it comes back later in life as shingles. You know, so this is going to hold the universities liable for as long as they, you know, players ever have complications in their life with this issue. And what does that fund look like? But, you know, you talk about, you know, guys making decisions and saying, hey, they'll play. Well, players are always going to want to play, but we have to protect them from themselves. And they're young adults. They're not adults yet. They're not adults until you have a mortgage. You're taking care of people on your own. You know, it's a little bit different than that, you know, when you have more things, more responsibilities. But, you know, we know that the biggest influence on these campuses sometimes aren't the presidents. It's some of these super coaches like Nick Saban, like Dabo Sweeney. How much pressure are they going to be able to apply to the conference to make sure that they get the result that they want?
Well, I think you see the coaches, you know, coalescing right now. I mean, we saw Ryan Day. We saw Jim Harbaugh, who we know they don't like each other. I mean, they're sending out the same message. Scott Frost is coming out. And it's interesting, Bart. Scott Frost came out and said something that I thought was very eye-opening. He says, if we don't play football, we're going to lose. But I think it was $50 to $80 million dollars in Nebraska. Yeah. And that's going to dramatically affect a lot of people. And I think that's the real reason why we're having these conversations.
Yep.
Like, I mean, guys, let's just think about this. If we were really all about safety and really all about doing what's right for these kids, we would have stopped talking about the football season probably 2 or 3 months ago, and we would have been past this. But because we are selfish, but because we talk about it, because a lot of jobs depend on it, we are going to try to make a football season happen because we're greedy. We're not all about safety. We want people to play. And what about Trey Smith and his dream? Well, guess what? If Trey Smith doesn't play football, he's still going to be the first guard picked in the NFL draft next year. But because we, as a fan, we as analysts, we as a company, we want sports. We are on these streets. We are beating these streets, man. Let the kids play. And I think that's something that we have to realize also, that if you really want to be as safe as possible, and you really want these kids to make sure as much as you can nothing happens, then we wouldn't even be trying to play football. And I think the kids, 17 to 20, I expect Trevor Lawrence to send out hashtag We Want to Play. What the hell is that going to do? If I'm a president and I got to worry about paying a multi-billion-dollar lawsuit, yeah, okay, let it go viral. That's not going to change anything 10 years from now if somebody on Clemson's team gets a lawsuit, gets a long-term effect from COVID and sues the university. So I appreciate what all the hashtags is going out there and the viral. No, that doesn't mean lickety split. What means something is if they can figure out a way to absolve the university of liability. I think that's the only way we play this year, guys.
All right. Listen, Booger, we appreciate a couple minutes. It's a tenuous situation, to say the least, and we'll have more to update everyone with in just moments moving forward this morning. Thanks, man. We'll talk to you soon. We appreciate it.
All right, Booger.
Later.
Your mornings are about to become unfiltered.
Don't try to manipulate me, because you're not going to win in that situation.
G-Sean, J. Will, and Zubin. Mornings, coming August 17th to the all-new ESPN Radio.
Mel Kiper Jr. Good morning, Mel. How you doing?
Dave, Bart, great to be with you guys.
Yeah, we appreciate it. I mean, there's so much going on, and it happens so quickly now. And I guess the first question is, because you're the draft guy, and when you think of draft, you think immediately of Mel Kiper Jr., what happens if we don't have college football this season? What happens if we go from last year into the draft next, you know, April, May, June, whenever it happens to be?
You go by what you saw up until this point. And that's what I've been trying to do during the summer, is go back and look at as many players as you can. It's going to be difficult, though, with some of the transfers to see how they would have played, assuming if there's no season. How does a Jamie Newman, quarterback that was at Wake Forest, would he have done at Georgia? If you don't know that, then you can't make any guess on it. Well, he would have done this or this. You don't know. But he would have had an opportunity to really, I think, move way up. KJ Costello, quarterback at Stanford, leaves to go to Mississippi State. Jarrell Cox, great linebacker at North Dakota State. That's 1AA. He leaves to go to LSU. Could he end up being the top 10, top 15 pick with a great year? Yeah, what if he doesn't play? Well, and you only have the North Dakota State tape. Tony Poljan, tight end at Central Michigan, former quarterback, leaves to go to Virginia. We're at 6'7", 260 with great athletic ability. Maybe he would become the number one, number two tight end. But if he doesn't play, then he's the eighth, ninth tight end. So I think those transfers in particular are the ones that we're looking at, that one great opportunity. And if they don't get it, then that obviously will impact their draft position.
You know, Mel, over the years, I've heard you talk about, you know, players that could benefit from going back to school and staying in school. Is that statement more true now than ever before? And should guys think about opting out so that they can get that year when things are back normal? And if that's the case, how does that affect the supply chain for seven rounds of an NFL draft?
Yeah, Bart's a good question. You don't know what a lot of these kids. I know the ones that have opted out so far. I mean, Gregory Rousseau, I think, needed a year at Miami to really improve his takeoff, you know, that quick first out of the blocks. Got some coverage sacks last year at Miami. It would have been nice to see him down there. But I think what a lot of players were concerned with is there going to be an interrupted season? If you test positive, then you're missing 2-3 games. Remember, a lot of these guys are not in the playoffs, aren't playing in these bowl games. They're getting ready for the All-Star game, the Senior Bowl, or the Combine, whatever it may be. So, again, I think that the way the season has gone, if there's any risk, health risk, then you don't play. And we still don't know what's going to happen with the season. Even with that said, what's going to happen with various conferences? Obviously, one double A's for the most part aren't playing. Division II, Division III. We saw Mountain West. We see the Mid-American. So it's going to be one of those years where, you know, we'll see which conferences opt to play, which ones don't. Will we have any college football? But certainly, I think individual players have to look at it that way. Well, we're, you know, can I improve my position, by playing college football? And in a lot of cases, they can. And then keep in mind, and Bart, you know this as well as anybody, you've battled your way into the NFL. A lot of these guys aren't highly rated until they, you know, there's a lot of guys you miss on. The guys are under the radar. And there's a lot of guys that are never going to get to NFL camps that are playing college football. And that's it. Once they finish with college football, their football careers are over. So they are looking forward this one last opportunity. If they don't get it, those are the kids, too, you really feel sorry for. There aren't NFL prospects. We're just, you know, good college football players. And if they don't get that chance this year, then, like I say, their careers, for the most part, could be over.
Mel Kiper Jr. with us here, ESPN Radio. Rothenberg and Scott on ESPN Radio, ESPN News, Sirius XM Channel 80, and, of course, your smart speakers as well. Mel, does this benefit, it must, right, like the power programs, the Alabamas of the world? Like, if we don't get to see the Trey Lances of the world and some of the smaller school kids like you mentioned, then if you played at Alabama or Clemson or Ohio State or one of those schools, you have a distinct advantage if we don't get or limited football this season?
Well, it's going back to the tape, really, David. It's really, and like I mentioned, you mentioned, you know, different players, from like a Trey Lance at North Dakota State, who was phenomenal. To have an opportunity to see him this year, yeah, would have been great, but you still have plenty of tape on him. I think it's the kids that didn't have great tape or didn't have an opportunity because of an injury. Like, I bring up Costello, only played in 5 games at Stanford last year from the injury standpoint. 2018, he was great. You know, 65%, you know, 29 touchdown passes, outstanding. Last year, injured. So he was like, oh, Kyle Trask, quarterback at Florida, really looking to come into his own this year at Florida with a lot of weapons around him. You know, give him that opportunity, then he's not going to go as high as maybe he could. So I think it's guys like that, or the guys that were the sub packages, the guys that were the nickel. They're going to become the lead corner. You know, a guy that was a reserve, especially, and there's going to be a starter, and has got one great year as a head. If he doesn't get that year, he's not going to go in the third, fourth round. So, again, there was a lot of those guys that jumped up into that third, fourth, fifth round based on one season. And before that season, you didn't even really have a draftable grade on them. Everybody brings up Burrow. Burrow was, well, once in a lifetime to go from a sixth rounder to the number one pick overall. But there are a ton of kids who go into a season way down the list, and because of that one year, jump up significantly. And if that season doesn't take place, those are the kids who are going to be hurt more than just about anybody else.
If some of the Power Five conferences decide to not play football, but then some of the Power Five conferences like the ACC or the SEC decides to play, how's this going to affect maybe potentially the Senior Bowls and things of that sort? You know, the time for guys to have opportunity to maybe prove themselves in some postseason type of games to show what they're about and be able to have access to coaches assuming that the pandemic will be over with, or we'll have some type of therapeutics or vaccine before, let's say, March.
That's a great question, too, Bart. Jim Nagy does a great job at the Senior Bowl, as we all know. He's a good friend, and they hope to have that game. But you just said it. We don't know what the status of this virus is going to be, what the status of the vaccine is going to be. You're hoping. You said therapeutics. Everything's moving along. It seems like everything's getting better, and there's better ways to deal with this awful virus. But we don't know. Will it come back? Everybody's kind of speculating on that in the fall. That's why, will it be interrupted? What's the NFL going to have to deal with? They start? Can they finish? What's it going to look like in November, December, January? What's the spring going to look like? Will there be a vaccine in place by the start of the year? All those things will impact not only the Senior Bowl, but the Combine workout. The draft, will it take place in late April in Cleveland? Will it be pushed to May? Okay, we don't know that. Will there be spring football? Will that take place? Some are planning to. Well, will they be able to? And then, and how many draftable players, if we do play in the spring, will still opt to play in the spring, knowing if you get hurt there, it's going to impact your draft position significantly? So there's so many unanswered questions. That's why I think everybody's trying to wait this out as long as possible before you make any decision.
All right, so Mel, are draft picks then, with the unknown, if we don't get a full season, are they less valuable? Like, you think NFL teams will be more prone to maybe be aggressive and trade draft picks for proven commodity players?
It's an outstanding question. You guys are asking him the phenomenal questions here today. It really is a case where, you know, you don't know. And I think that's one thing you say, okay, if you get to the draft and you have an opportunity to target a guy that you know a little bit more about, and say, I'd rather go get this guy than get multiple fourth-round picks, okay? So I think there is what you say, Dave, makes sense. And if you do feel like I have more confidence in guys, I have more of a body of work to evaluate, I'm not going to go for the fourth, fifth rounders that I'm just speculating on. But then you go, and I said this yesterday when I was on NFL Live, it's also going to be a case where college coaches, position coaches, and Bart knows this better, they know you guys better than anybody. And I think if you have good relationships with them and they can say, hey, there's a guy here, Bart Scott, hadn't done anything yet, he's been showing glimpses, but he's ready to emerge. And I can tell you, if you bring him in, he would have been a big-time player, but he didn't have the opportunity. But we saw in practice, and I saw in the meetings, I saw on tape, I saw what he could do before, and I saw what he was on the verge, on the cusp of doing, but he didn't get that chance. If you want to trust those contacts you have in college, those college coaches, maybe some personnel departments, some GMs, some personnel directors will have to do that a little more when you're talking about those third, fourth, fifth round guys that didn't have that opportunity. Do you still want to roll the dice and take maybe that leap of faith on some of those guys who didn't have a chance to prove it on the field, but were basically, we know, ready to really shine at the collegiate level?
At the end of the day, do you expect all of the top 10 prospects potentially just to opt out and decide to opt out regardless because they can only hurt themselves and just go to training facilities and say, I'm just going to get ready for the league because I only can hurt my chances, not, you know, elevate my chances?
I think in the fall, I think most of these guys will want to play. Bart, I really think they want to play. And I think, you know, you look at a lot of those Michigan Wolverine players that are really ready to really, I think, step it up. They need to play. And I think there's a lot of college players that feel like, hey, in the fall, September, October, let's play. I do think the spring would be something where, to answer the question, the spring's completely different. Because if you're getting ready for the draft and you're getting ready to be an NFL player and you're asked to be playing in March and April, why? Why would a first or second round pick risk that? You know, you know, it's the risk reward. If I get hurt here, I get an angle, how am I going to be viewed then? You know, if I get a significant injury and I'm not ready for my rookie season, you know, I'll plummet then. So I think a first or second round pick in the spring is a different ball game. That's probably a no, I would think. But I think in the fall, the vast majority of these players want to play. I don't care who it is. And some of the ones that have opted out have done, like Rashad Bateman with asthma. I have asthma. I know how that is when you're talking about this virus. So if you have anybody with any health concerns, underlying concerns, health-wise, then you're obviously in the family. You're concerned with somebody in the family. Everybody's different. But if you have that, then you opt out. But I think most of these college players want to play.
Trevor Lawrence, Mel, national champion, two-time mm-hmm. ACC champion, high school All-American, pretty impressive resume for a 20-year-old. Player resume brought to you by Indeed. Find the high-impact hire your business needs at Indeed.com/high-impact. So he's been very vocal. He wants to play. He's ready for football with Clemson. In your mind, is he the clear-cut number one selection in the draft?
Yes, I think you would have to believe he is. I think Justin Fields could challenge him a little bit. We didn't see the best of Trevor Lawrence late in those final two games. Obviously, you think about you get an ETN back at running back is going to be a plus. On the offensive line, they got to replace some pretty good players there, so that's kind of a new-look offensive line. You know, Ross is a great player at wide receiver potentially, but they took some hits there. So I think we'll see. I think Justin Fields is such a dynamic player to have the year two now at Ohio State. If he gets that opportunity, that could be a season for him to maybe close that gap. He's right there already. I mean, if you go to the, any draft ratings boards, look at mine, he's right there already with another season. And if Lawrence slips back just a bit, there could be a battle to see who will be there. So right now, I would say, yeah, he is the number one guy. Sewell, the Penny Sewell, at offensive tackle at Oregon, is a great left tackle. Fields, Jamar Chase, the wide receiver at LSU, great. But I would think if I'm looking for a challenger, we know quarterbacks in that number one spot, that's where they go. I would say Justin Fields will be right there with Trevor Lawrence, and it will be, there was a battle coming out of high school, and it'll be a battle down to the wire in terms of the NFL draft if Fields makes that nice jump up. And even if Lawrence just plays as well as we know he can, if Fields jumps up and looks like Patrick Mahomes out there, then all of a sudden you got yourself a great debate come late April.
All right, Mel, listen, before we let you go, and we're going to let you go in a moment, get on with your day. Your co-host, Dari Noko, joined us in the 8 o'clock hour. And I can understand that you might be upset by the message he has for you, but we felt that obligated to play this for you. Here is Dari just moments ago on ESPN Radio.
I mean, for 10 years, I've had to suffer through a summer where he's had the longest vacation in the history of time. Tell him to get off of his yacht, get back in the house, put on the headphones, and let's do some radio. I mean, my goodness, vacation time is over, Mel.
I mean, that's very strong words from your co-host.
Wow. Wow. I've been up till 4 or 5 in the morning evaluating players, trying to get ready for the season. And Darius, first of all, there's no yacht. It's a boat. It's not a yacht. It's a kayak. It's a jet ski. There's no yachts here at the Kuiper compound. So I don't know what Darius talking about there. Maybe at the Noka Mansion there is. But up on the Lake Norman down in North Carolina, I don't know. But August 29th is the date to return. We'll see what college football looks like. The thing that's going to be really interesting when we do come back and start talking college football, and the NFL is a separate entity because they are playing, but how do you evaluate these players? Like I say, how do you evaluate these teams knowing that some of these stars are already off those teams, and some of these guys I'm talking about, how are they going to fit in? Which are Jamie Newman going to be at Georgia? Which are Costello going to be at Mississippi State? The impact, like I say, of those new guys at LSU? And same thing for the NFL. Without a build-up, and Bart, you know this better than anybody, without that normal build-up to the season, and you're talking about, I know, preseason games, players say, not a big deal, but having everybody together and getting ready for a season in a normal way, how will that impact the season? Will there be any interruptions to the season? Hopefully they have everything virus-wise under control there with the resources the NFL has. So and we'll know a lot more today and tomorrow about college football. I'm talking about the Power Fives. But we already know 1AA, and we know Mountain West and the MAC aren't playing. So however you want to look at it, 2020 is like I say, I just can't wait to get to 2021, tell you the truth. Let's get the vaccine. Let's get a therapy. Let's get to 2021. 2020 has been horrible.
Oh, the worst ever. Mel, you are the best ever. We appreciate it. Continue to study that tape, and we'll talk to you down the road.
Bart, Dave, take care. Have a great one.
Keyshawn Johnson, Jay Williams, and Zubin Mahente.
What happens? Anybody can tell you what happened. What does it mean? Less people can do that. But we're going to focus on what happens next.
Keyshawn, Jay Will, and Zubin, coming August 17th to the all-new ESPN Radio.
All right, Dave Rothenberg, Bart Scott with you, ESPN Radio, ESPN News, SiriusXM Channel 80, and your smart speakers as well. The new morning show starts on Monday morning, just 6 days from today, 6 o'clock Eastern. Keyshawn, J. Will, Zubin, and ESPN Radio, as always, presented by Progressive Insurance. All guests join us on the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line. Let's go, Bart, to the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line. Bring in Patrick Surtain, former NFL cornerback and currently the dad of a player that's projected to go top five in next year's NFL draft. Patrick, we appreciate a couple minutes here on ESPN Radio.
No problem, man. My pleasure.
All right, so let's get right to it. College football hangs in the balance. We're not sure what's going to happen. Advice. I mean, your son is projected to be a top five pick in next draft. What advice have you given your son as far as this season is concerned?
Well, first and foremost, he's a ball player. So he wants to play ball at the end of the day. If things work out and they can get it done in a safe environment and everybody is collectively together, then obviously he wants to play. But that, on the other hand, he also knows the business side of things. And, if they're going to be playing games just to be playing games, without, any final outcome as far as, the national championship or what have you, then, you know, there's other things that we need to look at. But for right now, he's on campus. You know, he's working out with the team. You know, he wants to play, as do a lot of these kids. You know, they want to play. So we'll see how it goes, man. There's so much information out there that you're not sure about. So it's basically wait and see right now.
How concerning are you with the new information coming out about the Big Ten and six players that have contracted the virus developing the heart issue? Because if I can recall that Alabama already had some cases when they first reported back.
Right, and that's very concerning because you don't know, you know, the outlying factors, and you don't know what's going to happen down the line, 4 or 5 years down the line. And to see some guys that come out, and one guy had the heart condition, you know, as a parent, you know, you got to, you know, step back and say, okay, you know, this virus, you know, it's getting these players where it's dealing with different things, and, you know, you don't want to put your kid in that environment. So, like I said, until we can come out with more, you know, evidence of how it's treating, you know, kids that age, it's always going to be a concern. So, like I said, man, it's wait and see. And obviously, you want the kids to play, but you want them to be as safe as possible. And right now, you know, I'm not sure if that can happen.
Patrick Surtain joining us here on ESPN Radio. We've had coaches come out in the last couple of days saying, you know, it's actually safer. Their mindset is they believe it's safer to go play college football than to go back home and be in their everyday environments. Do you buy into that college football, in fact, is in some way safer than just normal day-to-day life for these kids?
You know what? It may be. It may be because, you know, you're creating sort of a bubble, you know, with the kids. But what's going to happen when the other kids come back on campus? And you can't keep an 18 to 21-year-old from going places and having them locked down. It's just, you know, not feasible. Kids are going to get out there. They're going to, you know, visit other people. You know, these kids in these smaller cities, they're going to want to go to the bigger cities at the end of the day, you know, on the weekends or what have you. So, you know, there's no evidence to state that it's safer. And you know, who's to say that if they come home, you know, that they can't contract the virus also. So, like I said, man, just too many questions out there and not enough answers at this point in time. And I know, you know, with my son, the SEC pushed the schedule back to the 26th. You know, I don't know if this to buy time or, you know, to get something done. But the kids want to play, man. But at the end of the day, it's just too many questions out there.
To your point earlier, if it's not a conclusion to the season, I'm sure he came back or he wanted to play because it was the hope to become a champion. If that's taken away, then what preliminary conversations have you had with him being a former professional, understanding the business, understanding that maybe his value can't even go up any higher than what it already is? And if that's the case, he's more valuable now than he ever will be. So it may be better for him just to work out at a training facility and hone his skills and, you know, kind of maybe pick your brain and trying to learn the nuances of being a great pro.
Absolutely, and that's the main reason why he wanted to go back. Obviously, at a program like Alabama, you know, they're in contention every year for a national championship. And if there's not that at the end of the year, you know, what are you basically, you know, playing for? You know, you got to weigh the risk versus reward factor. And like you said, if the experts and the pundits are right about, you know, him going top 10, top 15, then, you know, maybe you do have to look into that. So, you know, I think we still have, you know, a little bit of time left to make a decision and see how things goes down the line. Like I said, I know he's up there working out. He definitely wants to play, be around his teammates. You know, he has a lot of pride in his university. But he's 20 years old now, and he has to know that the business aspect has to come into play at some point in time. I think he understands that. And when that time comes, that conversation will be had and the decision will be made.
Patrick,
you know,
I'm
sorry.
Go ahead, Bart. No, go ahead.
No, as a father, you know, and a former member of the NFL like you, you know, are you more nervous for your son's journey than you were for yours? And what a privilege is it for you to be able to watch him achieve his dreams and for you to kind of be able there to document his journey, you know, going knowing where you guys came from and, you know, how he's matured as an athlete and as a player and become a man?
Yeah, it is definitely more exciting than to watch his journey because I've coached him all throughout Little League. I was in high school football club. I was actually the head coach, still a head coach of a high school, you know, down here in Florida. And just to see his growth, his development, seeing him, you know, one day, you know, laying in the bed as a child, the next day his feet hanging out there in the bed. You know, just to see, you know, his
fast,
growth spurt and yeah, and everything he's been through, man, his work ethic, his knowledge of the game, and just to see his first couple of years in college, you know, at a big time university and playing on the big stage. You know, it's definitely been a dream of his, you know, to make it to the highest level. You know, I can remember, you know, he used to write notes as a little kid saying that one day he's going to be here. And now, you know, it's finally on the cusp, you know, of it happening, him fulfilling his lifelong dream. So, you know, very proud of him. You know, got some more work to do, but, you know, we'll see how it shakes out. But it's definitely more, you know, nerve-wracking watching his journey than it was mine.
I'm sure. It always is as the parent. Patrick Surtain, former NFL cornerback, father of Alabama corner, who's expected to go, the latest mock has him 2, which is unbelievable, behind Trevor Lawrence. So last one for me. What's the communication been, and I'll ask you, obviously, from your school and your situation, specifically Alabama, the school, and the parents of these players?
Yeah, I can say, man, Alabama, they're top-notch at what they're doing, man. They have meetings with the parents almost every week, just, you know, remind them what they're doing at the university to keep, you know, their kids safe. And they do it better than anybody else, man. They're getting the kids all the resources, all the coaches and the administration, you know, they get tested on a regular basis, and they're doing it right. They're doing it right. But who's to say that all schools are doing it that way? So, like I said, you know, if there was a season and things were to go as planned, I know for a fact that Nick Saban and his staff, man, they'll do what's right by the kids, and they'll make sure that they're playing in a safe environment.
Well, we know that they have unfinished business, that they've been knocked out of the playoffs the last couple of years, and, you know, he wants to put that cherry on top of that, you know, great career he had in college before he goes off to the next level. You know, I wish him all the best. Wish you all the best as well.
Appreciate it, man. Thanks for having me.
It's time to rise and grind.
Whether it's in practice, a scrimmage, or a game, I'm trying to hurt your feelings.
Keyshawn, J. Will, and Zubin, coming August 17th to the all-new ESPN Radio.